The man behind the book, Bad Teacher, is leaving teaching, and that's a good thing. Podcasting activists unite. Matt Damon's mom, schools our kids deserve, and even faster pussycat. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
Politicians protecting free speech. New legislation calls for University of Wisconsin system officials to suspend or expel students who engage twice in, quote, violent, abusive, indecent, profane, boisterous, obscene, unreasonably loud, and other disorderly conduct that interferes with the free expression of others, end quote. Finally, politicians doing something in line with a fundamental constitutional right. Free speech, yes. According to U.S. News, Wisconsin Republicans Representative Jesse Kramer and House Republican Robin Voss have introduced legislation to protect free speech on University of Wisconsin system campuses. Why are politicians finally protecting our fundamental right to free speech? Aren't college campuses institutions devoted to intellectual debate? Isn't the college campus a symbol of the unfettered search for truth? What the hell happened that made a small group of Wisconsin politicians decide to legislate the protection of free speech on University of Wisconsin campuses? It's a great question, and one that the crack news teams at Busted Pencils have investigated with a fervor, lots of coffee, and of course, bourbon. And here's what we found out. According to some politicians behind this legislation, there is not enough, quote, diversity of opinions, end quote, being represented on campuses, and students with diverse opinions are being denied an opportunity to hear from experts with diverse opinions. Come on, you know what we're talking about here. Conservative views are taboo on college campuses, and those that dare express them are subject to intellectual bullying. Hell, even being forced to listen to people like scientists with data making claims about the human influence on the changing climate here on planet Earth. Today's college campuses have become an oppressive environment where people with alternative facts require the intervention of politicians. Need I remind you of what happened at Berkeley when Ann Coulter was scheduled to dispense a bombastic litany of diverse opinions? Berkeley students were indecent, profane, boisterous, obscene, and unreasonably loud. And as the late Kevin Meaney used to say, that's not right! So alt-righters, just hold tight. Soon, you'll be able to hear your diverse speakers on a college campus near you without molestation and, most important, freely. Yes, Ann Coulter, who said America should invade Middle Eastern countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity, will be able to freely charge your college $20,000 to $50,000 so you can hear cutting-edge intellectual debate about international politics. Milo Yiannopoulos, you know, that noted expert on gender sexuality issues, he can remind you that, quote, gay rights have made us dumber at a cost to taxpayers and police overtime for $75,000. And for all you genetic intellectuals, go ahead. Feel free. Invite Charles Murray to campus to remind, quote, well-meaning whites that they are not closet racists for thinking intelligence is a dominant trait in white people. Just don't forget your checkbook. Murray's diverse opinion will cost you $20,000 to $30,000. How's that for some free speech? Oh, Tim, that's not right!
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
Politicians, free speech, and college campuses. What a tricky, tangled web. I wonder if Matt Damon's mom can help untangle this.
Wait, what? You want to know what my mom would say? All right, well, just ask her.
Yeah, this whole question of that you would have state lawmakers actually threatening to pull funding because they don't like a particular course, that makes me very nervous. And this is related to the whole discussion on the arts, because the arts are a way of thinking outside the box, of looking at something in new ways and going to the edge of something, and that's what makes us critical thinkers, that's what stretches us and also contributes to our democracy in the sense that it reduces standardization and promotes diversity. And you've got a professor here. I don't know the professor. I don't know the course. It doesn't really matter. The fact is, professors have to be free to be able to invent and create in ways that make sense to them. The university has its own process for, you know, designing and approving courses, and that goes on there, and that's fine. But to have legislators, you know, threatening to influence what's happening in the university is very worrisome, because they have a whole different perspective. They come from more of a business model, and they have an expectation of education that's very different from the many creative professors who want to look at who want to look at education in very original, unique ways, and they should be. I mean, that's the purpose of one purpose of higher education. So, no, I don't like to think of you know, what's happening actually in this particular situation at the University of Wisconsin is parallel to what's happening in all of education at every level. Because we've had an intrusion into education from people who are outside of education, policymakers, lawmakers, business people, who have a really different view of the whole nature of education from those of us who are in the field of education. And they've been imposing their point of view on us, and they've managed to do it to a great extent through the Common Core standards and other kinds of standards and through all kinds of mandates and policies and laws that have really inhibited education and narrowed the curriculum and taken the arts out of the curriculum and made it much more scripted and standardized. And that's what I see that they're trying to do at the university level.
See, I think you're giving this guy a little bit more credit, and I will just say this is Dave Murphy from Greenville in Wisconsin, who, in fact, I want to quote him. He said, you know, he's going to scour the university to make the university courses to make sure they're legit. That doesn't necessarily sound to me like necessarily a business model sense as much as it is a censorship threat. That's, and he's got a decision as to what are legitimate courses and what are not.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the whole question there is, has he ever said what is legit to him? What does it mean?
I don't know, but if we're going to discuss anything dealing with race, I guess that's not legit, and taxpayers should not have to foot the bill for that.
See, I think this gets into the basic question of what is education? Because to my way of thinking, and many other educators, to explore as part of the humanities issues of race, racism, living in a racist society, how it affects all of us and how we view ourselves and others. That's in education, it's essential that you do that. I mean, there's so much evidence that teachers perpetuate racism in the classroom in so many ways that part of teacher education is to really go through a process with teachers where they're examining their own racial biases and understanding themselves as human beings who've grown up in a racist society, whatever race they are. That's really essential to the work they can do as educators. Otherwise, they could perpetuate the status quo and create a lot of harm to children. So that I think that kind of course has to happen. But I worry if someone's saying, I want to look at it to see if it's legitimate. That's what I mean. What is legitimate to you? Is it just that you, study data or numbers or history? Or
hey, the American patriotism, as long as we're, you know, Columbus discovered America and today we're all free. In between that, we got really great. That's a legit course there.
Yeah, so you're talking about the transmission model of education, where we just want to reproduce what's already happened and teach kids what's already known.
Right.
And we don't want to put them through a process of actually imagining or examining themselves and imagining what's possible in a different world. No, because that's scary. And that's something that gets out of our control.
This is Matt Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me and just ask my mom already.
He is an internationally recognized expert on educational policy, school reform, teacher preparation, and educational equity and social justice, and author of the book Bad Teacher: How Blaming Teachers Distorts the Bigger Picture. He is also the former dean of the School of Education at the University of San Francisco and chair or previous chair of Educational Policy Studies at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And finally, he is a founding member of EDGE, that would be Education Deans for Justice and Equity. Welcome to Busted Pencils, Dr. Kevin Kumashiro.
Tim, thanks so much for having me on your show.
Okay, so that introduction is about maybe a fifth of the stuff that's available that I could have used for your introduction. I'm wondering if I'd have gone through this. Is are we talking? What's happening? Are you retiring?
I wish. But no, I'm actually stepping away from my previous position in order to focus much more of my time and energy on engaging in the larger public struggles over school reform and public education in this country.
So when I go then to www.kevinkumashiro, KevinKumashiro.com, I can find you, and there you are looking at me. What an awesome web page. Kevin Kumashiro Consulting. So now we have to add this to your list. And I'm looking at this movement building for equity and justice in education. So quick, dirty question right to it. If I go to this website, what am I asking you to do?
Yeah, you know, what I'm trying to do is figure out what's my intervention in this moment and what is it that we as a community, as a society, most need to be doing that we're not doing enough of? And so that's what I'm trying to put my energy into, is to provide different kinds of either consulting services or professional development for educators and for education advocates to kind of explore how to draw on their experiences, how to leverage their expertise and resources in order to be a part of and to build a stronger and bolder movement, social movement for equity and justice in education. And so that's sort of what you'll see on the website, and that's what I'm very excited to be launching, is a whole range of different services that really kind of in some ways get us to think differently about how to do the work that we are already doing, but to do it a little bit differently. You know, a lot of educators, we are teaching, we are doing research, we are doing all kinds of service in our professional and in our regional communities. And what I'm trying to really think about and talk about and support people in exploring is how to do all of that, but in a slightly different way, where it's really about it's really aimed towards having this broader impact on these struggles over public education. How do we do this more collectively? How do we do it more impactfully? How do we do it more publicly?
Well, so let me go right to a practical question. I'm a seventh grade social studies teacher who's in charge of the social studies curriculum in my school district. Would I be interested in anything you have to do to say?
Yeah, you know, right now what I've launched is a series of, for example, professional development, and attending these webinars and workshops are not only higher ed educators, but also graduate students, but also K-12 teachers, and even community educators. So hopefully, yeah, people in different professions working at different levels will find something helpful. And I think, you know, what I strive to do is not, just like what I've tried to do in my writing, is not try to offer these kind of recipes that once you get it, you will be successful and impactful in all ways, in all contexts. But rather, what I try to do is offer some kind of frameworks or conceptual lenses that we can use to assess what we're doing and to imagine different ways of doing things. So as a teacher, especially one in a leadership role, you know, we might ask questions like, you know, how might we revamp the curriculum so that it is more engaging to the students who are struggling the most? Or how might I offer professional development and leadership development opportunities for my colleagues in my school or organization, so that they can really imagine doing the work that they're already doing, but with maybe a more, with a different goal in mind.
Well, let's talk about that goal, because I've heard you say it a couple of times. It's on your webpage a few different ways, and let's look at it, and let's just, let me ask the question about this, what sometimes people seem as a very soft, cushy, mushy, or undefinable, but I see this idea of equity and particularly social justice as one of the issues that seems to be something that you're framing, and that your services maybe center or evolve around this idea. But, what is social justice?
Yeah, it's such a great question, because I think people interpret it and use that term in such a varied, multiple ways. And sometimes it is, as you're pointing out, sometimes it's a really watered-down kind of definition. So the way I think about social justice is that it's more than just political correctness. It's more than everyone needs to get along. It's more than even just kind of representational, everyone has a seat at the table. I actually think it's more than that. I feel like, for me, social justice is about recognizing, as a starting point, that injustices permeate our institutions and our societies and communities. It is, racism, sexism, all the isms, right? Mm-hmm. Racism, sexism, heterosexism. They've become so normalized in our lives and in our work, and it often plays out in a way that is hard to recognize. So social justice work, to me, begins by kind of naming the moment. It begins by naming and recognizing the ways that inequities and injustices play out.
Mm-hmm.
And to be very intentional and direct about saying we're going to do our work in ways that explicitly and effectively challenge and confront. And let me add one more layer of complexity, which is that I think justice work, advocacy work, just like education work more broadly speaking, are very contradictory processes, not only because we don't often see how injustices play out, but also because sometimes injustices play out in very paradoxical, unintended ways. In other words, sometimes we think we're doing great work.
Mm-hmm.
We think we're either being non-biased or even justice-oriented, but we might be still contributing to the problem, which is not surprising given what I was saying earlier, that the status quo is never neutral, right?
Well,
It's always,
right, there's always something, but, more directly, right, I think this is one of those ones where we can say, so when I say, look, I'm colorblind, I don't see color, I treat everybody the same, I'm a big supporter of social justice, that statement itself is problematic, right?
Yeah, so problematic, and it's problematic precisely because it presumes that the norms, the status quo, the way things are, is neutral. And so if we don't talk about any of these dimensions of diversity, then we're actually being as fair as we can be. But what if we actually started with a different perspective to say, no, actually, the status quo is not all fair and neutral and just, that actually every day we can point to examples interpersonally and institutionally of racism and other forms of bias and discrimination playing out. Well, if that's the status quo, then it is, absolutely a problem to say I don't see color, because actually you need to be seeing color,
mm-hmm.
if you want to address the ways that it becomes a barrier or a cause for inequity.
And this has got to be hard, though, in today's climate where we've just elected a president who kind of blatantly puts it in our face, almost daily basis that being colorblind and or whatever else you want to have, or being actually elitist and racist and right up front with it, is okay and empowering. And I'm wondering how that's playing out as you start this new enterprise away from academia and really trying to go out and make and establish and create collective building movements. Are there people giving you, just say it, are you getting a hard time from anybody?
Definitely there are. This is an interesting moment, right? It seems to be that our emotions are heightened because the rhetoric is so inflammatory. And what I think is interesting and a reason for us to kind of be cautious is in this moment when Trump and others are being very blatant about, saying, let's ban Muslims and let, all this kind of really problematic things. Let's kick out the refugees. What I think we get lost in is this very compelling narrative that all of a sudden things are really bad because Trump is, bringing to the kind of presidential, the bully pulpit, if you will, all this really problematic language and policy frames. One kind of silver lining of his election is that it has mobilized the public. But the problem to me is when the mobilizing seems overly centered on an individual like Trump or Betsy DeVos or Jeff Sessions or any of these other individuals without recognizing that actually there's a history that they're building on.
Sure.
DeVos is a great example.
Right.
The Democratic administration laid the groundwork for her to be able to come in and push forward on the very much privatizing, marketizing policies that she's pushing for.
Well, you just got yourself kicked out of being the next National Democratic chair, Kevin, let me tell you.
Exactly. That's not going to be in my future, right? Because what we need to be fighting is not this one individual who we're going to treat as singular, but rather the broader problems that he's merely surfacing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what our work needs to be doing. It needs to be connecting the dots. It needs to be looking critically at history. And as we were talking about a few moments ago, perhaps most important, it needs to be looking at the contradictions within our work, particularly those who use rhetoric of justice, civil rights, liberal, whatever, but are actually buying into the same stories that are pushing forward very problematic and harmful policies and perspectives.
It's Dr. Kevin Kumashiro, and you can check it out at kevinkumashiro.com. We'll definitely have a link on the website. Now, Kevin, I wanted to add before we go, though, I mean, what's happening right away that you want to tell people, hey, go to my website, look for this, sign up for this, try this out, move on to this. I mean, here's your opportunity. What's happening with kevinkumashiro.com?
You're so kind for asking, Tim. Well, one of the big things that I'm trying to do this summer, and hopefully a lot of educators will have some time to get away for a few days, to immerse ourselves in some, I'm offering these two four-day workshops. One is about writing for the public. So how do we get different really research-based and justice-oriented perspectives into the public discourse?
So in other words, you're going to try to help people learn how to not write for each other, but for the other people who actually need to hear this stuff.
Exactly. We've created this very assimilationist profession, higher ed, academia, right, that is all about talking to ourselves.
Sure.
And we need to do better at leveraging our expertise. And the other major opportunity that I'm trying to encourage people to take advantage of is a four-day workshop on leadership. And there, the question is, how do we lead towards social justice? How do we build a very different kind of institution and be a very different kind of leader that does all the work that we've been talking about over the past few minutes? And I think that's a challenge that even those of us and you yourself, Tim and I have had this conversation about how we be a dean for social justice. And I think whether you're a dean, whether you're an emerging leader, whether you're a leader in a K-12 school or a community org, we're still struggling with this larger question of trying to embody a position that doesn't always allow for that kind of work. So that's the tension that we'll be working through over the summer.
Well, if you're out there and you're listening, again, check it out. Go to kevinkumashiro.com. Check it out on the Busted Pencils website. He's got some great things. And the rumor has it, too, is that for a price, he'll even come out and speak to your group. Now, I don't know what that price is, but just give them the busted pencils discount, we'll just say, Kevin. How's that?
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Kevin, thank you so much for your time, and thanks for stopping by and busting pencils, as we like to say.
It's great to have you, and keep up the great work that you do.
Her blog, wrenchinthegears.com, warns us of the horrors of computers replacing teachers. So who better than author activist Allison McDowell to give her take on that famous Alfie Cohn question, what are the schools our children deserve?
Our children deserve schools with human teachers, where they can learn with each other, where they have access to a full curriculum that respects them as people and individuals, and that doesn't track them and slot them into some slot to serve the global economy.
Unfiltered, comprehensive, and of course, controversial. This is Busted Pencils Radio.
An activist of the week on Busted Pencils before, but now he's back. He's a past educator. He is the host of the show Just Let Me Teach. You can find it on Indiana Talks. Welcome to the show, Justin Oakley.
Great to be back.
Justin, are you making a difference? Is Just Let Me Teach out there changing the narrative, allowing people to, as you say, just let them teach?
Well, we'd like to think that we are. You know, it's funny you ask that question because people ask me all the time, how are you? And I always tell them I'm living the dream. Just so that they think they've met one guy who actually is living the dream. And then there is hope. So, you know, I don't know. We still chug along. We've been on a little bit of a hiatus, working on some technology stuff to upgrade and update our capabilities. But I think that we are. I think that what you do, too, we have a interconnection with folks who have become advocates in this and social justice warriors and people who, I can tell you this, 5 years ago, there weren't 20 shows about education. There weren't 10 Jennifer Berkshires. There weren't 5 to 10 podcasts about education, and now there are. So I'd like to think that we probably were a little bit ahead of the grain on that one and kick some of this stuff off.
You mean like pioneers, like out there, you know, cutting down trees and shooting bears and stuff like
yeah.
that?
If it's Oregon Trail pioneers, it might be a fifth or sixth generation.
Hey, back when I was teaching fifth grade, that was my fifth grader's favorite Apple game was Oregon Trail. Tell me, who's your best guest?
Man, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Well, I have some regulars. I have the I Love Steven Singer, because there's actually a jeweler named I Hate Steven Singer. So this I don't know if you've ever had Steven on, but he blogs. And Diane Ravitch has really picked him up as a best bud. Jennifer Berkshire's really good on the writing level and researching, investigative journalist type of thing. You know, I was pretty blessed and lucky out of the gate. I had Diane Ravitch on, like, right off the bat. The most famous person I've had, I had George Carlin's daughter on.
George Carlin's daughter on Just Let Me Teach. How did you get her on, and what connection does she have to the show?
Really nothing. I just brutal honesty, I stalked her on Twitter.
You stalked her? So you're a Twitter stalker.
Yeah, I tweeted at her, and she basically said, yeah. I think it was one of those things where she was like, yeah, I'll do that. And I actually stayed on her, and about 2 years later, my dad passed away, and she wrote a book about growing up Carlin, about her dad when she got it all out of her system, and it just kind of really hit something, and I must have hit a nerve with a tweet, and we kind of bonded. So I've also become like a weird space for futurists and authors and comedians now on Twitter. So we may be branching out, Tim, and not just talking about education, but maybe get some comics. And I'm actually trying to book the lead guitarist for Faster Pussycat my program.
Hold on, Randy, he's thinking of trying to get the lead guitarist for Faster Pussycat on his show. Do you have any connections?
Yeah.
Hey, my producer has connections.
Okay. So, well, I know the new guy's name is Ace Von Johnson, and I've been talking to him. Well,
friends with Eddie Trunk, who knows all the hair bands.
There you go. You just
there
heard
you
it.
Go.
Eddie
and
Trunk.
This is weird. Let me just. We got to talk about this, okay?
Go for it.
It's going to be just a crazy ball show. Eddie, I called into Eddie Trunk's show, and the guy was the last caller. I basically challenged Eddie Trunk to some history trivia, and he said he would come on my show. And then the guys from Faster Pussycat tweeted to Eddie and said, go on this kid's show. And so we're still working on it. So if we do that, and you guys want to be part of like a co-hosting thing, we could arrange that.
Yeah, you know, so tweeting, quote, you know, celebrities and trying to get some. I had a great tweet that we're still following up with Tom Morello, particularly about his mom. I a big activist and a past teacher, and we put out a tweet to Tom about your mom being a teacher. Would she be interested in getting on the show? And, you know, it was one of those things where you don't expect to hear back. And there was that tweet right back from Tom Morello saying, yes, she was a teacher. And yes, she might be interested. Get in contact with so-and-so. And so we're working on that. I think we need to keep a balance of those people that are out there also doing the hard work of being in the trenches and maybe hearing some of the things that you and I talk about, taking it to heart and trying to implement it in a classroom or in a school setting.
Well, just real simple, off the cuff, being super blunt, I've always played with the idea that the just let me teach is a wristband, so it's the bands. And so for some weird reason, I don't know what, Twitter has an algorithm or what, but bands follow us. And it just kind of started with that, too. So I always said that bands enjoy this, and then some band, you know, the band Bush followed us recently when I tweeted that. So figure that out.
Yeah, I know you have a more of a proclivity for the hair rock. I'll say this show has more of a proclivity for the punk rock. I don't see that as a contradiction. In fact, we've always said from a punk rock perspective, you know, we've had Martin Atkins from Public Image Limited on the show. We've talked to a punk rock guy in Milwaukee. The idea of being an activist and an advocate and kind of in your face for social justice falls right in line with whether you want to just say the rock and roll spirit or the punk rock. And so when people ask, you know, what's that connection? I said, well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? You know, when you've got people out there in music saying this is unjust and this is what's a justice-oriented position, why wouldn't they be on an education talk show?
Now that you've described that, Tim, I don't think there's anything more rock and roll than standing up for the little guy and fighting for causes. And, you know, now that you've explained it to me in that amazingly succinct way, I think you're right.
You recently experimented with another form of communication to other people.
Yes, I decided to, since the world wasn't crazy enough already, that I would join it and go try to do stand-up comedy. My report back to you is, it's like the Nike slogan, you just got to go do it. Done a couple open mics, and on my second attempt, won the tip jar favorite comic. I don't know how, but I did. And so now I kind of got a bug for it. Been going to shows and watching comics, and I got too stressed out with all. I've limiting how much media I'm absorbing these days because my soul can't take that much bad news constantly. I needed to have another outlet. And so that's something I'm going to definitely go out and do as much of that as I can.
Do you weave education into the stand-up stuff?
I did. I didn't on my very first time, but on my second time. Actually, yes, I have. Everywhere I've gone, I said I used to be a teacher and no one claps. And then, of course, I have a field day with that and say, see?
See?
You know. And then they all clap, and I go, no, clap now, you know, don't do it now, I don't want your pity, but I am going to say this on your program.
That's
you
okay.
Ask about getting guests on the show. There is one out there who kind of irritates me.
Okay.
Because I thought, you know, what education needs right now is like a positive, master encourager. I can't imagine more than, not so much professional development, but I can't imagine jumping a school year off with just like something funny, inspiring, nothing about data walls, just all about teachers and just something fun. And lo and behold, Jerry Brooks shows up. I don't know if you know Jerry, but he's the guy that sits in his car and does YouTube videos and like 5 million people look at it. But he beat me to the dang punch, and I'm like, so now I have been communicating with Jerry, trying to get him on the show. Look him up. He's hilarious, and he's got a cult following. I mean, if he posts something, it'll have 6 million views. So he's traveling around doing the Hall Pass tour, where I don't know what he talks about because he's just funny. He's a principal out of Kentucky, and I think he beat me to the punch once again.
Truly, though, you had already thrown the first punch. Just let me teach. You being out there, doing it first, throwing first punches. Hey, you know what? Getting knocked down. But so, Justin, it's Just Let Me Teach, Indiana Talks. Look for more interested guests, and even, maybe even possibly Faster Pussycat on Just Let Me Teach. That's going to be an interesting show. And if you work that out, I think a Busted Pencils Just Let Me Teach co-hosting of that show is absolutely in order.
We are working on it, man, and I think that somehow the gentleman that plays for them will lead us to Eddie Trunk, who did say on live radio that he will come on my show.
Well, if you got Eddie Trunk on your radio saying he will come on your show, and I've got my producer here, Randy, going, look, I know Eddie Trunk.
Help me out, brother.
Help me out, Randy. Help me out. Randy. We're going to make something happen. Justin Oakley, right. Thank you so much for your time today.
Take care.
Time now for our salute to legendary activist and historian Howard Zinn with A Moment of Zen.
Protest beyond the law is not a departure from democracy. It is absolutely essential to it.
My thanks to Kevin, Justin, Allison, Matt's mom, and you. Like what you hear? Hey, write a review on iTunes. I am Dr. Tim Slucker, and thanks for Busting Pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.